And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 97 of the Fanboy Garage. Once again, so happy to have you guys with us for another week, another episode. And thank you to all of those that wish us a very happy two-year anniversary during the last episode. It goes a very long way, so thank you so much for all of the support. So, Chris.
Yeah.
Lots to talk about. You know, we put in that quick intro after the Zack Snyder's Justice League was announced, and it sounds like this thing has not stopped moving.
No, and it isn't going to, as we figure. And, you know, I think, and we were just talking about this before we started recording, but I think a big part of it is because of the fact that there just isn't much else going on.
Yeah.
You know, so now you get a giant morsel, right? Like this dropped right in your lap. And it's like, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, you're going to be able to talk about forever because, I mean, really, it's something that nobody stopped talking about.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For what, just the conversation may have shifted slightly as far as like, is it going to happen to, well, now it is happening and, you know, that type of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's, look, this is the big story. And, you know, when you see like AT&T, their Twitter account is.
Yeah, they're soaking some flames,
aren't
they?
Yeah, they're playfully, I say playfully involved. And there are some people that, of course, want to try to pull some extreme negative out of this and try to say that it's like, oh, they're being inflammatory or they're being insulting. It's like, really? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the AT&T Twitter account is sitting there trying to figure out, you know, devious reasons for why they're doing this stuff. But I mean, basically a lot of it has been aimed at Ben Affleck, right?
Right.
Teasing his Batman and, you know, whatever that's going to result in. I mean, look, you're going to start to see a lot of this stuff. You know, the fact is, you know, Zack Snyder's Justice League is, you know, going to be a thing and it's getting a lot of hype. It's getting a lot of publicity. And like I mentioned last week, I've seen at least a large amount of excitement and anticipation about it.
Yeah.
Now, not being on social media much lately has allowed me to separate from a lot of the negativity. But what I did find this week, it seems like, in looking back, you're starting to see a little bit more of that now start to creep in, right? Now, for whatever reason, to me, it's just like, enough with that stuff. Like, yeah. Me personally, I'm tired of it. Like, I get it that maybe there's some people that are resentful of this and for various reasons. But it's happening now.
Yeah.
So let's just focus on the fact that, you know, we're going to get this movie. It's going to be, or whatever, however they're going to release it. And it's going to be another way for us to be able to see these superheroes that we all love, right? At the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
we've lived through, you know, at least in my lifetime, I mean, we've lived through, you know, Joel Schumacher's Batman movies, right? And we've lived Bat Nipples and, you know, right. Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze and Tommy Lee Jones thinking Two-Face was the Joker. And, you know, we've lived through a lot of really bad comic book movies and, you know, we've lived through Superman 4 and we've lived through...
Hey, I know
you love Superman 4, but, you know, my point is we've lived through all of this stuff and polarizing things like Superman Returns and, you know, like... Look, at the end of the day, we love these superheroes, and let's just be happy, regardless of, you're not going to love everything, right? Mm-hmm. And we're not going to hate everything, but at this point, like, let's just talk positively about it. I mean, yeah, we're getting a Batman movie in 2021.
Yeah.
That's going to be a different thing, and that's awesome. And then we're going to get this version of Batman. I mean, look, there were two Flashes at, you know, at one point. We had the TV version, and then you had the version in the movies. You know, two Supermen recently.
Yeah,
so why is this a weird concept? I don't understand. And why does one have to necessarily take away from the other? I don't get it.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. And it's actually kind of sad because you see so many geek sites trying to capitalize on the conversation, right? And so they come up with these crazy ass rumors of like, oh, you know, I saw something along the lines of, you know, the Batman with Robert Pattinson's movie might be canceled because Ben Affleck is coming back. It's like, what? What are you talking about? Who's saying this shit?
Yeah, wow.
And then you know, and then you've got fans who are doing this kind of stuff, pinning each other against one another. So you've got people kind of saying that stuff about Pattinson versus. Yeah, Pattinson. I almost said Pattinson. Pattinson versus Affleck, and all of this stuff. Look, you're 100% right. At the end of the day, we're gonna get a second Justice League movie in less than 5 years, right? And for all intents and purposes, this is gonna be a very different film, and that's great. And we'll get to see our heroes back again, and that's a big deal. And I just find it funny how many people are just trying to take advantage of this conversation and make themselves relevant either on social media or, just kind of coming up with these kind of harebrained ideas to spark controversy and start arguments and things like that.
And I think it's also taking away from the narrative, which is the fact that there are. And I think a lot of it is because there are people that want to distract and deflect away from what the current narrative is for a number of reasons, some of them self-serving, and the fact that there were a lot of people who got this, I'll say got it wrong because, and this is why, and not wrong because there were a lot of people who were saying this was never going to be a thing and it wasn't a thing and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And I go back to, I don't even remember, again, how long ago it was when I started to talk about the Donner cut of Superman 2 and why I started using that as an example of a movie that, what didn't exist and then one day all of a sudden it did exist. But, anybody that was on the side of never was wrong. Forget about whether 2 years ago when you were saying that it wasn't going to be a thing or whatever, that it wasn't. It doesn't matter, because if you were on the side of never and it's never going to happen, then you were wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, because we're going to be wrong a lot when it comes to certain things. But sometimes you just got to fess up and own up to it. And, and we also have to remember that this wasn't just about toxic fans versus podcasters or bloggers or reporters or whatever, or toxic fans versus studio executives there were people like Jay Oliva.
Yeah.
Right. Very respected person in this industry who was saying back then, no, this thing does exist.
Right.
I know firsthand, there were people like, Jason Momoa who would say, no, it does exist. There were somebody like a Mark Hughes, for instance, right?
Right.
Mark Hughes, who was in the beginning, he was one of those, no, it's not a thing, it's not going to happen. And then, like last year, he realized, he somehow found out that it was, and he changed his tune.
Yeah,
that's fine. I mean, that's how things should be. And so those people have become champions for this thing. And there were a lot of people that were championing this thing, and they were being yelled at and ridiculed and told no, not quite to the level of the quote unquote toxic fandom was doing. But those were respected people who were saying, it is a thing.
And
they were still being shouted down and being told, well, you have an agenda because you have an in, you have this. And what I've actually realized is that, having distanced myself from this a little bit. And again, I think sometimes people like myself, or even I think you to a point, we got miscategorized because, I don't like BVS, obviously. We've talked about it a lot on the podcast for a number of reasons, having nothing to do with Zack Snyder, right? And I've said this from the very beginning, I was a Zack Snyder fan. I love Watchmen, and I loved his Dawn of the Dead.
And dude, I love 300.
300, yeah. So yeah. I was never anti-Zack. I was excited when I found out that Zack Snyder was going to direct Man of Steel, or what became Man of Steel. I've always been a fan of his work. I didn't love the direction that he took with all of these characters, but, you know, I liked Man of Steel, and I didn't like BVS having really nothing to do with Batman. It was more about, like, I just didn't like Lex Luthor and stuff like that, but, but there are people who clearly now, in looking at this, just don't like Zack Snyder.
Right.
And it becomes very obvious to me when you just see how, like, when somebody like a Jay Oliva says, no, it's a thing, and then people are still trying to shout him down. And now that this thing is becoming a thing, right, that the Snyder Cut is actually going to be a thing, and you still see people trying to kind of poo-poo it and and try to come up with negative angles and try to come up with, you know, reasons for why they were right back then and why they're wrong back then. Like, that's where I start to say, like, hey, maybe this really is, for some people, about Zack Snyder. And and I think that what happened is, and this is just a theory, I think that the toxic fandom that I was able to separate myself from, right? Because I just chose not to engage in a lot of that stuff.
Right, right.
So for me, I didn't feel the impact of that the way maybe some other people did. And obviously, I believe that it was the thing because I did hear a lot about it and read a lot about it. I'm not going to say that it wasn't, right? Clearly, there was a toxic fandom there. But, you know, I really just think that that toxic fandom has caused people to have their opinions now of this so skewed where it's like, I don't want anything to do with this anymore. I don't want any of this fandom in my universe, in my existence. And that's a shame because, you know, I don't think that that's how we should be. At the end of the day, these are movies.
Right.
You know, and these are movies about superheroes. And if you look at, like, what we're going through right now as a society, right, and as a world with this pandemic and what that's done in a very, very short period of time, how it's completely uprooted our lives, like, now should be a time where, you know, we should be happy that the thing that we're debating right now is superhero movies. You know, like, that's such a fun escape. And you know, to be able to talk about movies. So, and that's why it got me thinking. You know, I was thinking about it this weekend that, you know, despite the fact that I wasn't crazy about BVS and all that stuff, I realized that I've actually watched BVS more than I've watched a lot of Marvel films that I actually liked.
Right.
And the reason why I bring this up, because I know I kind of just veered off here a little bit, is because of the fact that, you know, those movies, right, say what you want about them, and there's a lot you can say, but they at least got conversation going.
Yeah.
You had to think about them, and there was debate, and there was conversation, and that's kind of cool now. Like, looking back on it now in hindsight, like, when I think back to some movies that I like that I don't even have the interest to have a conversation about because they're just whatever, versus a movie that I can have a passionate conversation about, you know, I'm okay with that now. Like, I actually welcome that at this point. And maybe that's one of the other reasons why I'm more excited about the idea of this Zack Snyder's Justice League than I would have been maybe a year ago.
Yeah. I mean, those are all, I mean, that's all fair stuff. You know, I think he had a vision for these characters, and I think a lot of it was meant to spark those kinds of conversations and you know, sort of in-depth thought versus some of the stuff that we've been, I guess, treated to with the Marvel films, right? Which are, for lack of a better word, popcorn films, right? We go, we have a good time, we come back, and we're like, all right, yeah, I feel really good, you know? Versus, you know, some of the more thoughtful decisions, or the intent to be thoughtful, I should say, in terms of deconstructing some of those characters. So, you know, I'm certainly excited to see what Justice League could have been and what it will be again, in his hands. And, you know, to all of those folks that that championed his movie and his vision, in you know, in the most respectful ways, like, you guys won. Like, that's huge. That's huge. That's a big deal. So, you know, I think, unfortunately, because of some of the stuff that's been happening on social media lately, like that's starting to lose, you know, folks are losing sight of that again, because fans just love to eat each other alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the other thing is it, it opened the door for other conversations to happen, right? So, David Ayer was very vocal, congratulated Zack Snyder on getting back into the saddle and finishing his movie. And then there's talk about David Ayer coming back to get his cut of Suicide Squad.
Yes.
So that to me is huge, because I don't know how many people, I don't know if that was like, I don't know if there were a lot of people kind of doing that, you know, banging that drum. But I would love, like, if there was a movie, like Justice League was one thing, but to me, the movie that hurt the most, and this is the, it was the movie that kind of derailed me entirely from the DCEU was Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
And so I'm a big fan of David Ayer.
Yes.
And and I had followed a lot of his conversation about some of the things that had happened while he was making his film and some of the vision and direction he wanted to push his film in, and how it tied into, you know, Zack Snyder's Justice League, because Steppenwolf was supposed to pop up
right
in that film at the end of that film. So I'm stoked at the, you know, at the opportunity to check that out. And of course, Jared Leto's Joker, who we heard immediately after the film was in theaters, that you know, I think 80% of his stuff was cut. So I'm excited to see
which is interesting, because then it tells you like what is the Ayer cut of Suicide Squad? Like,
seriously,
you know what I mean? Like, it's fascinating to find out like what exactly is it? Like, what was left on the cutting room floor? I mean, if 80% of the Joker stuff was cut, like, what is the movie supposed to look like?
Right.
Which is interesting. I mean, David Ayer is a good director, and that movie is not indicative of what he, the theatrical version, obviously, is not indicative mm-hmm. of what he is as a director. So, yeah, I mean, I'd be very interested to see that, and it's going to be ironic if it does happen. And at mm-hmm. this point, who's to say? I mean, why wouldn't it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know? At this point, right?
Yeah, so you could get this almost like a very different DCEU, at least for that portion of it, right? Which is, I think, interesting, because, you know, I would actually like, having gone through this now where I was thinking about these movies and going back to the whole thing about like how I feel like the movies at the very least are thought-provoking and sure. get conversation going, which is never a bad thing, right? It's going to be very interesting to watch, be able to watch Man of Steel, BVS, and now this Zack Snyder's Justice League as a, you know, a trilogy, right, so to speak,
right.
and be able to reevaluate it as a whole,
mm-hmm.
And see how I feel about it, like as this kind of a more thought-provoking, challenging kind of superhero story. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I've mentioned this before on the podcast when we were talking about his five film arc. I don't know that I would want an entire universe of this that went mm-hmm. on kind of forever. But for a short arc that I could watch with like beginning, middle and end, I think I'll be very much on board for it. And I might look at BVS very differently,
mm-hmm.
You know, depending on how they bring it home. You know, and then if you slide in like an air cut of Suicide Squad and how that relates, I mean, I would obviously Steppenwolf is probably not going to be a part of that, right? Or maybe it will be. I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah, but it might be interesting to watch how it might all fit together and wind up being a better story now, like a self-contained little story in this new form than it was when it came out in theaters. And, you know, I've seen one of the new reactions I've seen this week is people saying, because now they announced that, you know, it might actually be more than $30 million, right? That they're going to invest in this Snyder cut.
Right.
So people are like, well, why, like, why, you know, make director's cuts for these movies that, you know, well, and Suicide Squad overperformed, that did really well at the box office, but like, why make, you know, why make director's cuts for these movies that underperformed and all this stuff? And I got to thinking when I saw that, how it doesn't, that argument doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because how often do you get director's cuts of movies that were huge successes?
Oh, sure.
Like, 'cause isn't that the point, right? Like, like, very rare. If a movie has an enormous success at the box office, like, how often is a director going to say, you know, that really wasn't my vision?
Right.
Because why would they do that? So, I mean, you know, like, Rogue One, for instance, right? Like, you don't see Gareth Edwards going around saying, you know, that really wasn't my vision for that movie.
Right.
Because his name is on it, and it made over $1 billion. And it overperformed at the box office.
Well, you know, we know the story behind it.
Of course, but my point is, there's a reason why, like, some of the more famous director's cuts, right? Like Blade Runner, for instance. Blade Runner was not a box office success.
Right.
Blade Runner became a cult classic, mainly because of all of the different versions of that film that wound up being released over the years. Like, there are multiple director's cuts or alternate cuts of Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
And those different versions of the film got a conversation going. This is probably going to sound familiar because I kind of just said this a few minutes ago, right? Got a conversation going, which version is better, with narrative, with narration, without narration, with this ending, with the other end, blah, and that created a life of its own, gave that film a life of its own. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, Blade Runner, this movie that didn't really get great reviews when it came out at the time, you know, in a time when reviews really kind of meant less than they do now in some ways, but it also didn't make really a lot of money at the box office. And all of a sudden, it's become this cult classic that's like sought after by collectors and by sci-fi enthusiasts, and it got a remake, it got a sequel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which also did not do that well at the box office.
Right.
You know, so this happens a lot. Like, I mentioned these other, like, you know, we mentioned, I mean, Superman 2, I guess, would be the exception. Although, to me, the Richard Donner cut isn't really a director's cut, because technically Richard Donner he's not the director of Superman 2 on, you know, as far as billing goes, right? Whereas Zack Snyder is the build director of Justice League. Theatrical. Yeah. Richard Lester is the director of Superman 2. So the Donner cut it's close to the Snyder cut in a sense, but it's not. But I mean, you look at like Daredevil, Ben Affleck's Daredevil, that has a director's cut that I have not seen, but I heard it's actually much better.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
And that movie did not do that well at the box office. And right. That got a director's cut on video. So I mean, rarely it makes complete sense that these movies would be the types of movies that would get director's cuts. Especially because now we live in a time when people are, at least the hardcore fans that would eat this type of thing up, are well aware of what went on. You know, like in a day's past, nobody would know what happened to David Ayer in the process of making Suicide Squad.
Right.
But now, right. You know, people within this world that we exist in know all about all that stuff. So it's become an anticipated thing.
I mean, that's the other thing too. I mean, you know, I think there are some directors who play ball with the studio, right?
Of course.
Gareth Edwards is a great example of that.
Sure.
David Ayer to a certain degree, played ball. And then all of a sudden when people are like, well, what the hell happened with Suicide Squad? Then, you know, conversations start going and people get upset. And then at some point, I think he did break away and was like, there's a lot that was left on the cutting room floor and blah, blah. And actually, I think it may have been Jared Leto that said it first. Because then he was like, this movie sucks? Like, and he had said something. And so that whole conversation started. The Zack Snyder Justice League thing was, I mean, that was on blast from like the moment it started. Because I specifically remember after BVS, they announced Justice League Part 1, Justice League Part 2. And then I feel like there was an early, It was an early set visit for reporters.
Yes.
Just to kind of talk people off the ledge post BVS, because BVS was not performing well. Because Justice League went right into production after like BVS stopped, or once it hit theaters. And then along somewhere, maybe shortly thereafter, it was announced that it went from one film or two films to one film. And so that became, all of that stuff became very public.
Sure. Yeah.
You know? And so you can see, I mean, that was one, I mean, that is the epitome of watching in real time a studio kind of grab control,
yep,
over the creative process of a film. And, you know, of course, no one likes that. I mean, it's like you're drawing a picture or coloring something and someone just grabs the crayon from you. Like, I'm going to finish this for you.
Yeah.
I can't do that to my daughter. She's so mad.
Yeah. And
so, you know, when I think these kinds of situations with the Snyder Cut, potentially with the Ayer Cut, it's going to show, you know, Hollywood maybe something completely different, that maybe we should, for better or worse, just let the directors do what they do. Like, it's all about, look, because for the studios, it's all about the bottom dollar, right? That's it. It's all about,
right,
the money. But at the end of the day, you'll still make your money even if you know what I'm saying? Like, I think they'll still,
yes,
make their money even if it, in their minds, may not be a well-received film.
Right. So
all of those indicators, like the review system, yeah, all of those things that surround films are kind of broken, you know, because, yeah, people are still going to go see movies. Like, we've seen,
yeah,
like, there are bad movies that make billions of dollars.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Well, so, I mean, and look at Venom, for instance. It didn't make $1 billion,
yeah,
but I mean, it made, what, 800 something million dollars? I mean, more than it ever should have.
Yep.
I mean, yep, you know, the thing is that I think it does speak to, I think you hit on it, studio interference. So there's studio interference and then there's studio interference, right? Mm-hmm. And rarely does studio interference work. So Rogue One would be one of the few examples where studio interference wound up working out.
Right.
We don't know what Gareth Edwards' version of Rogue One would have been. Maybe it would have been better. Maybe it would have been worse. We don't know. But at least the film we got was a really good movie that did really well at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at Solo, right? So Solo didn't work out at the box office. And of course, there was studio interference with that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at this entire Star Wars sequel trilogy, it was just riddled with studio interference and indecisiveness.
Right.
And that's, I think, where you start to get into trouble.
Yep.
So there, you can have studio micromanaging, right? And you wind up with like an MCU situation, right? Where,
right,
you just have one person steering that ship and the studio, everything has to kind of adhere to a certain thing. That's one thing, but that's not really studio interference. That's studio guiding the ship.
Right.
Then you have, because, you know, for the most part, the Marvel stuff has never really been presented as like a director-driven,
no,
thing, right? It's a studio-driven thing.
Right, 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 right.
And the directors are, for the most part, along
to
for the
ride. To a certain extent, yeah.
Yeah, to a certain extent. But if you look at like Star Wars, for instance, they chose to go all different directions. They wanted it to be studio-driven, but then also let the directors have their say. And like, if you, and then they realized that, oh, well, and then they hit the panic button. So like, you know, J.J. Abrams directs The Force Awakens, right?
Right.
So now the studio is going to take over, but then they have Rian Johnson direct The Last Jedi, but let him make like a director-driven film.
Right.
In the middle,
right,
of all of this. And,
yeah,
and which is fine. I mean, again, we go back and forth on whether, you know, you agree or disagree with what, you know, just like with BVS, right? Whether you agree or disagree with the choices the director made. But what makes it worse is then the studio gets involved and they get rid of Colin Trevorrow and they wipe out his script. And then they say, oh, panic button. We're going to hit,
yeah,
the panic button because The Last Jedi, that they had the fans and didn't, people was, it was polarizing and it didn't make as much money as we thought it would. And so now JJ here, take over, save the day. And then you get The Rise of Skywalker, and it made even less money. Yeah. You know, so
I mean,
you
there
could,
are so many similarities.
Sure. So if you look at the DCEU stuff, right, you had Man of Steel, which kind of set the tone. Then you, I think they jumped again too soon into the BVS concept, but it still could have worked.
It made more money, though.
Right? Sure. Of course. It made more money than Man of Steel, so we're going in the right direction, at least. And you could say what you want about how much money the first Batman and Superman movie together should have made, but whatever. It still made more than the movie before. Mm-hmm. So we're heading in the right direction. Then the studio hits the panic button.
Right.
And then they decide, okay, you know what? This isn't going to be director driven. We need to we're going to listen to what the fans and the critics or whoever the hell they thought they were listening to said. We're going to wash our hands of all this. And then they bring in Joss Whedon, and we get that theatrical mess of Justice League, which didn't, I don't think, appeal to anybody.
Right.
It didn't appeal to hardcore fans. It didn't appeal to mainstream audiences. I don't really know what who the studio thought that film was going to be appealing to.
I mean, there are some people that like it.
But as a fun little, like...
Yeah, it's like, okay, that's fine.
But is the first Justice League movie supposed to be like, oh, that was a fun caper?
No, that's the thing. You know? I mean, is it? No, because we've had a first Avengers film, and that did gangbusters, right, in the theater. So it's so, I mean, that's, I think that's also part of the problem, is that you have a studio who... You know, and of course, I mean, these are coming from two rival comic book publishing companies. So it's like you got the Marvel DC thing going. But, you know, they're measuring they had to be measuring themselves against, you know, the success of the Avengers. Right. And if those films, if of course, they have to, because it's a similar audience. They're like, well, we've got this, you know, we've got the big bad and we've got our heroes uniting and, you know, all of those elements are there. And then it just doesn't live up to the standards. Yeah, I mean, that it's a critical failure for the studio. But I also think that they went about it differently, like way differently. And so I wouldn't expect them to have done that well just because it's the heroes. I mean, there were, you know, for phase one had a culmination of things. They, you know, you're introducing all of those heroes separately.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it, but and DC didn't have to do that.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, but see, for me, just it's the criminal mistake is if you're going to get involved, right? If you're the studio and you're going to blow it up, to me, and again, this is all hindsight, right? Because now we're getting Zack Snyder's Justice League, but to me, what they wound up delivering with the theatrical Justice League.
Right. Yeah.
Was almost criminal in the sense of
it's
like
a dumpster fire.
Yeah, if you're going to get involved at that point, like you would have been better off just letting the story finish and then washing your hands of it.
I mean, you know what? It was funny because Ron Diesel and I had a quick little Twitter exchange, and I said, you know, the fault, because I noticed a lot of people were like, once the Snyder thing was announced, everyone goes after Joss Whedon. Like, haha, F you, man. It's like, dude, he's getting paid. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can haha, F you, but like somebody signed his check.
Yes.
That's the studio, right? They, you know, they obviously pulled him in for a reason. They said, oh, this is the dude that brought the Avengers, you know, brought the Avengers to the big screen. Like, we need a little bit of that juice in our Justice League film. Right, he's getting paid to do a job, like, you know, so it's not Joss Whedon's fault. But what?
Well, although I hold on, just sorry, before you go on with that, maybe because there are some things that you can. Joss Whedon, it's his fault that the score is his fault. That was his call, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So while he was brought on to do a job, absolutely, and he did. I guess what he had to do, and he did it with, you know, he had to balance footage that was already shot, stuff that needed to be reshot. I get all that. But like things like, here are two things that I can fault Joss Whedon for. One is the score,
right?
You know, and the direction he chose to take with that, which I almost feel like was almost like patronizing, right? And the other thing I fault him for in the sense is that he's Joss Whedon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, DC, Warner Brothers, they wanted him to do this for those reasons that you just laid out.
Right.
He probably had enough stroke. Now, I understand that they were trying to still go at the time with the public narrative that, you know, this was Joss Whedon just finishing Zack Snyder's vision. I get all that. But, which still could have been the public, you know, version of the story, because it wasn't true either way, right?
Right.
But Joss Whedon probably had enough stroke to say, you know what? Let me redo this the way I need to redo it then, if that's going to be the case. Mm. And things like the Henry Cavill lip and all that stuff probably didn't need to be a thing.
Yes. But that, like I was going to say, I was going to actually mention that. Is that Joss Whedon's fault or is that the studio's fault for not wanting to push Justice League?
Well, because, I mean, I you know what? But that's kind of, I guess, what I was getting at. Like,
Point, it's like we already have a shine turd here, so just let it go. And by that point, they were already planning.
Right.
They had already kind of like cleaned house. They started to clean. Well, no, they didn't clean house yet.
No. And Joss Whedon though probably had enough pull to say, "Hey, you want me to do this? I'll do it, but let's push it back."
Yeah, I don't see, and that's the thing. I don't understand how anybody looking at that, the first opening 5 minutes of that film, looked at Henry Cavill's face and said, "Oh, this is ready to go."
Yeah, ready to go. But it doesn't matter that he looks like John Travolta in Pulp Fiction. It doesn't matter.
I don't know if the studio would have been willing to push it anyways.
Yeah, because I remember sitting in the theater, and as soon as he came on, because you know you had heard about the lip, right?
Yeah.
Before, ahead of time. Sitting in that theater, as soon as he comes on the screen, I turned and I said, that's what he's going to look like?
Yeah.
It was just so weird. And so to me, those are those things. And you know, maybe, and again, this isn't necessarily complimentary to Joss Whedon, but I guess in a way, Joss Whedon was probably like, my name's not on the movie. What do I care?
Yeah,
you know, maybe there's something to that too.
Yeah, maybe.
So, I mean, to me, I don't know. Like, is Joss Whedon, does Joss Whedon need to be doing that? I mean, again, this is a conversation from 3 years ago, but does Joss Whedon need to be that person? Like, does he need to be the, you know, the film fixer type? I mean, he's Joss Whedon.
Right.
I don't know. Right. So, I do think that there's things you could fault him for, but I got to be honest with you. I mean, I actually think that I'm happy that this Snyder thing is happening now, because I hope that when it comes out, I'm going to judge it with a clean mind, clear mind, right? I'm not going to bring any past thoughts or whatever into it. And I actually think what I'm going to do is, I think when it does release, I'm going to watch Man of Steel into the BVS Ultimate Edition, into Justice League, because I want to watch it as a complete work. And I have a feeling that I'm going to gain an appreciation for that story, and for a lot of the reasons that I outlined here about it being thought-provoking and inspiring conversation, as long as it's positive conversation. And what I mean by positive conversation isn't like, oh, everything is wonderful. I mean positive, productive conversation, I guess, is what I'm going for, where we can have productive debate or about these types of things, because that's really cool to be able to do that. And I'm just kind of tired of all of the like agenda back and forth stuff that I'm starting to see now. And it's really kind of it's more depressing than. And again, having been able to distance myself from the quote unquote toxic fitness, but I mean, we've seen, especially this past week, I mean, you've seen like the worst of toxic fandoms, like in the wrestling community with the death of Hana Kimura, you know, who was 22 years old and took her own life after being, you know, bullied and harassed online by toxic fandom. And, you know, seeing like things that like even like in the wrestling world, there is incredible amounts of toxic fandom on social media. Like Alexa Bliss got harassed the other day for, you know, by somebody. And it's just it's unfortunate. And I just being able to separate from that and being able to sit down rather than have these toxic back and forths with toxic fandom, it's be nice to be able to just have like cool conversation with real fans and be able to exchange thoughts without bias, without resentment, without anger, you know, just hey, let's have a cool debate back and forth about Superman, Batman. I mean, I've done that. You know, I've done that with people before, and it's really cool to be able to say, like, well, this is what I liked, and this is why I didn't like, because there's so many different versions of these characters, right, over time,
mm-hmm.
that, I mean, everybody has their Batman or their Superman, right, or what they like about it. And to be able to have those conversations, you know, with the different sides and people. I have friends that are hardcore, like, comic book fiends, right? They're every Wednesday, they're at the comic book store getting their comic books and all that stuff. And they love BVS, and they love Man of Steel, and they loved what Zack Snyder was doing. And they play the video games, you know, like the Injustice and all that stuff.
Right.
They
right.
loved what he was doing with that vision, because it was different from what they had gotten before. And, you know, you can have these kind of civilized, sensible conversations about this stuff with them. And that's exciting stuff. And I'd like to get back to that, especially now, like after, again, dealing with what we're all dealing with right now.
Right.
The last thing I want to do is get on board and have like some type of a hostile debate. We went through that with The Last Jedi, right? We went through that with BVS. We went through that with Justice League. Like, I'm kind of like, oh, can we just start having like productive conversations? And that's why for a week I was excited about seeing mm-hmm. like some of the people that were like, you know what? Yeah, I wasn't really big on this whole Snyder Cut thing, but like I'm kind of juiced up about this. Like I'll be interested because I think the timing is perfect for it. But then after a week, then the other stuff started to creep in again. And now it's more, and again, it's partly because there really isn't much else to talk about.
Yeah.
So hopefully there will be soon. I just want to be able to talk,
yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm ready to just put a pin in the whole thing and just leave it. Like I've at this point, a couple of days in, I've stopped engaging in all conversations related to the Snyder Cut because I just want to see it. Nothing anyone's gonna say about it's gonna change that.
Well, yeah, that's the other part. Yeah,
you know, and the negativity and just the sensitivity too. About it is it's just a little much, so I'm just gonna stay out of that hornet's nest.
Well, it's possible. Yeah, and you know what, I haven't really followed it much, but like I could imagine, and forget about the like the super toxic element of it, because
no, it has nothing referencing has nothing to do with the toxic people. It's actually people like I follow regularly.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. Yes.
Like losing their minds over
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like at this point, it's like enough is enough. There has been so much antagonism, right, mm-hmm. for the past mm-hmm. few years, even predating the release of Justice League, right? In between, from the minute BVS ended, right, the first credits of BVS rolled in the first theater that it viewed in, right, that it showed in. From that point forward, there's been so much antagonism, right, and back and forth, and you know, on both sides of that equation, right, that the
sure.
pro Snyder people, the anti Snyder people, and there was this whole world, like that existed in between, right, which would be like, you know, somebody like me that didn't like BVS, but didn't hate Zack Snyder, didn't you know hate like. Whatever, like there was this whole universe there that was in between, and but it's both the extreme sides arguing is what you know mm-hmm. What everybody hears and sees, right? And then most people just kind of sit back and they watch the movies and they like them or they don't like them. But all of that antagonism for all these years, and it's like now you're getting the Snyder Cut, so it's like if you're like, why are you still antagonizing? Like you know. I have a hard time with people who complain about the toxic fandom and then do nothing but still antagonize and feel like they need to drive home their points for why they were right or why this shouldn't happen or whatever. Like still today.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I mean, and I said this on Twitter, and maybe I'm part of the collective, the antagonizers, because I am known to antagonize in person. But I think, you know, the only thing, that I wanted some responsibility for was the toxic behavior itself, you know, like the egging on, what it looked to me to be the egging on of that toxicity, and just holding people accountable for what they do online. And I think a little goes a long way from from people in leadership, people who of influence, who could just say like, look, I want this as bad as you do, but like there's a good way to go about it and there's a wrong way to go about it. And, you know, just to put a nail on that whole part of the conversation, I think Henry Cavill did an awesome job when this thing was announced, because he basically said, look, I understand that there are both sides of the fence here, you know, people for and people against it. Like, at the end of the day, let's just celebrate that you guys have another chance to see us all on the screen again. And I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, it was like the celebratory thing. While acknowledging that, you know, there were two camps, and that, you know, at the end of the day, it's over, like it's done, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's why he's Superman.
Yeah, exactly. And you know? And I agree. And that's the thing, is that, you know, the toxic element exists in social media in all phases, right?
In all fandoms.
Politics, yeah. Right? In the different fandoms, Star Wars, clearly, wrestling, we see it a lot now. I'm sure in certain things that I think video games, it's a thing. I mean, it's sure it's in everywhere, has their toxic fandoms. That's something. But the average fan who's either pro or against something, that's different. And I just think that it's just, in a week, I started to see people who were excited about something. And then the following week, I started to see people start to go back to like people who were like, oh, I'm not even going to bother talking about this, whatever. Let's move on to whatever. And now they're back to trying to like, it's just don't antagonize either side, I guess is what I'm saying, because we're past that point now. If you don't want to watch the Snyder Cut of Justice League or talk about it, then don't. That's fine. Move on. Go talk about whatever it is you want to talk about. But for the people that have been excited about this and have wanted this for all these years, that are finally getting it now,
parade, man.
Because what you're doing is you're now all of the people who sit back and say this validated the toxic fandom, what they're actually doing, I think, by antagonizing the honest, true people who just, you know, legitimately wanted to see this happen, by antagonizing those people now, you're almost encouraging them to respond in a way that's going to create a more toxic fandom. Because like you're encouraging that back and forth, and you're encouraging that like come at me, and it doesn't make sense. Like, why turn the good fans who may have had a different opinion than you have, you know, against you? Like, why do that? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. You know, the best way to not have toxic fandoms is to not feed into it.
Right.
You know, if you don't feed into those extremes and you don't give them ammunition, then they go away. So, So hopefully we're starting to head in that direction. And I know I am personally, and I'm going to continue to now be excited or anticipate this Zack Snyder release. And who knows? The sky's the limit. Maybe we'll get the air cut. Maybe we'll get, you know, a limited series with Ben Affleck as Batman or something. I don't know. But I don't want anybody to be nobody should be on the side of never anymore, because it's just, you're most likely going to be wrong these days, because things have changed very quickly. Yeah. And, you know, we're in a much different time now. And when streaming services out there and the need for content out there, and studios clearly listening to fans because they have niche products that are going to need that niche audience.
Yeah.
So I think anything is possible at this point. And it probably always was. But, you know, I just don't want to, I don't want to hear the whole never thing. And, I mean, an HBO Max is going to debut tomorrow as we record this, right? We're recording this on Tuesday, May 26th. Tomorrow is the debut of HBO Max, which is pretty exciting. It's going to have like 2,000 movies at launch. And it's going to have like some original programming and, you know, some really fun stuff. So, the newest addition to the streaming, I don't want to call it streaming wars, but the newest addition to the streaming menu, is now out, Peacock, I guess, is the only one left. Mm. And then once Peacock is out, we'll have our CBS service. You'll have your NBC service. You'll have your, you know, the HBO service, which covers, you know, the whole Turner and Warner Media conglomerate. And you'll have, of course, Disney Plus, which everything yeah. that involves. So almost all of your major networks, you know, will be represented by their own streaming service, which is cool.
Yep. And you'll be paying just as much money for all of those services as you would for cable.
Maybe.
Dude, I just like it was funny. I just I didn't have Stars and I'm trialing it.
Yep.
For a show that that my wife is really into called Power. And it's like, oh, you know, after 7 days, you know, your subscription at $8.99 is going to start. And I'm like, we're not finishing this season in like a week. And she's like, but we will. I'm like, no, we won't. And give me your credit card because I ain't paying for this. But I'm at a point now where I'm like, oh, man, these services are starting to like rack up.
Well, they are. But see, and the reason why you're at that position, though, is because you're at that point where you're still paying for cable.
Yes.
And
yes,
you're sir, racking up streaming services. So yes, something has to go, and it's not the streaming services.
No.
Yeah, so... Yeah,
I gotta drop this. Speaking of, and I've been talking about it for a while, but yeah. I've got to look at my contract.
Yeah, and the other thing that you have to realize, too, is that the one thing you do have with all those streaming services that are piling up is that they're flexible. You yeah. can maneuver those. You know, you can... Get rid of some if you're not using them. And that's...
Yeah, and just cancel the subscription.
Yeah, you got to... It takes a little bit more work. You know, I was actually reading... And the other thing, too, is... I was reading an article yesterday that said that they did a study and, you know, with streaming being up during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is, like, ad-supported streaming services are up, like, 148%.
Jeez, so people are like, I'm not paying all that money for yeah. ad-free.
Yes.
I'll pay $4.99 and get to watch my show, and I'll just yes. be inconvenienced for like 12 minutes.
Yes, which is interesting dollar. Because now you're starting to see like people have a lot of options when it comes to if they just want a free stream.
Right.
Right? So there were very, unless you had an antenna that worked, there were very few options for people with television, with cable, with that model. If you just wanted to not pay for television,
mm-hmm.
right, you would have to, you know, get an antenna, hope it worked, right? Hope you got enough channels. And even with right. that, like you didn't have on demand and all of that stuff. But now with these ad supported services like Pluto TV and Stir and even like the more on demand style services like Tubi TV, right? And things like YouTube and Crackle. Like, you could just use those services. They will cost you zero. And there's... And the Roku channel, if you have a Roku, there's tons and tons of content on those services. Everything from news to sports to, you know, movies. Even some of them, they have on-demand movies, TV shows, all of that stuff. So you could just have all of those as, like, a core where you could get hours and hours of viewing out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you want, then you start paying for your premium tiers, which is going to give you more of the stuff that you may need right at that moment, right? So that's how you want to look at it. So you want to think of it as if you're building a television bundle. Start with those free services. Those would almost be like your free over-the-air type stuff. There's limitations to it, but there's still a lot of content with it. And that's what people are turning to. And then from there, you figure out, okay, what am I not getting from these ad-supported services? Mm-hmm. And that's when you start to add on your premiums, just like you did with TV. And if you do that, it's going to cost you significantly less than if you had cable. I guarantee it. There's just no comparison. And even like things like, so like for me, I had Hulu. I had the commercial free version,
mm-hmm.
which is $12 a month. I just downgraded that to the $6 a month.
Oh, hell no, I couldn't do that.
No, well, I did because I find that now I'm not watching a lot of Hulu.
Mm.
So
I'm watching more Hulu than I was before.
Yeah, so I did that, and it's and that $6 savings
You applied to another streaming service.
Well, yeah. So basically now HBO Max, because I got the $11.99 deal, I get HBO Max for $5.99. Like it, so I basically added HBO Max, subtracted the ad-supported, the commercial-free Hulu for the ad-supported version of Hulu, and I only added $5 a month to my bill.
Yeah, not bad.
Right? So it's all about net cost. That's how I look at all of this. Mm. So, you know, so basically, I'm now, by doing that, I'm basically, in a sense, paying the same price monthly for both services. So that's what I really, that's the flexibility that you have. You know, and CBS All Access has the same thing. It has a commercial free version and an ad-supported version. I, from the very beginning, have always paid for the less expensive, the $6 a month ad-supported version, because the legacy content, the classic content on CBS All Access doesn't have commercials anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you want to watch an episode of Family Ties, for instance, or Taxi, or I Love Lucy, right? There's no commercials on those.
Oh, the old Nick at Night shows.
Yeah, there's no commercials on those. So it's really just when I watch Star Trek, or even classic Star Trek. No commercials on those. But if I want to watch Star Trek Discovery or Picard, that's where if you want to watch The Twilight Zone, the Jordan Peele one, there's commercials on those. So, and I don't watch a ton of that stuff. So I watch it as it's happening, and I can live with the commercials, because if I was watching it on TV, they'd have commercials anyway. And it's less commercials than you're going to get on a regular TV show anyway. Yeah. So I have no problem paying for that.
Speaking of commercials, have you encountered those interactive ads?
Yes.
Those are so annoying. Yeah, those are worse.
Yeah.
Because typically you can just tune your brain off, right? And like, oh, you know, they're talking about cars or whatever, and you might get the same commercial three times in a row. But these interactive ones, man, you actually have to pay attention, because you're like, oh, God, okay, my 30 seconds is up. I'm going to push play. And then you accidentally push the wrong button and you're flipping through shit that you don't mean to. Those things are so annoying. I can't stand them. Sorry.
Yeah, well, they have to get creative. Obviously, they're in a different advertising market now. Yeah. But yeah, so anyway, so that was an interesting thing that I read, and that ties into the cost, and that what people... I think the fear that people have is when they're worrying about cutting the cord and how much it's going to cost is they haven't cut cable yet. So they're seeing, well, I'm adding this and this and this. And it's like, okay, well, get rid of your cable, start from scratch, and then see what you actually need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because cable gives you that false sense of what you truly need to have.
Yeah.
You know, you may wind up just watching YouTube. For the rest of your
life. I do watch a lot of YouTube, actually. Yeah.
So, but, yeah. You know, it's, yeah. So that's that. And did you see this one little bit of news? I guess it's official now that James Mangold is directing Indiana Jones 5.
I did not know that.
So
did
this
not
is,
know that at all. When was this announced?
Well, so apparently February 26th, it was Variety what? Had, well, Variety had a rumor.
Mm-hmm.
That Spielberg was not going to direct the movie, mm-hmm. and that it was looking like James Mangold might be, you know, the guy. And now it was confirmed, I guess, by IGN today that James Mangold is going to direct.
I am kind of flipping through
Indiana Jones 5.
Wow. I guess that is, and he's approaching it in a Logan sense, as I'm quickly kind of going through this, but there wasn't, you know, the funny thing is there aren't many IndieWire, no, didn't, there aren't any of the major trades that broke this news.
No, it was like I said, it was IGN that had
IGN.
It and I did see Nerdist actually had it too, like Nerdist quoting IGN, obviously. Mm. That was a story that I saw.
That's crazy.
So who knows whether what that's all about, but it is interesting.
Yeah, all of the gaming sites picked it up.
Yeah.
That is so crazy. Yeah, well, then you go. Here you go, Collider. Collider caught it. Frank Marshall updates us on the script. Praises new director James Mangold. Well, how about that? I don't even think they should be making this movie. I don't know. It's like the whole Rambo thing. By the way, have you seen the Rambo movie? It's like free. It's available.
You're talking about Last Blood, the last one?
Yeah.
I have not.
That?
I've heard it's horrendous.
Me neither.
I know one person, literally one person that has seen it, like that I speak to, like in the outside world, and they said it was horrendous.
So you got that. I mean, the deal is here is that these films don't trend very well. Let's talk about Terminator. Did you see that movie, Dark Fate?
No.
I don't know if it's even available yet to stream.
It's
anyway,
gotta be, right? It's been a while.
I don't know. but yeah, I don't know anyone that's seen Dark Fate and has been raving about it, and that went out with a fizzle and a pop.
Yeah.
Let me try to think of any other film that was older and then, you know, they came back besides Star Wars. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I love James Mangold, and I think he would totally – I think he's the right man for the job. But, oh, God.
Well,
Crystal Skull left such a nasty taste in my mouth.
But if they're – I actually forget at times that movie came out. But, you know, if they go the Logan route, then are they basically saying, like, we're just looking to appeal to, like, the older, like, the generation of people that grew up on those movies, and this will be, like, their swan song to tie it all up?
It kind of has.
And you're not going to try to appeal to, like, a new, like, you're basically giving up on the idea of appealing to, like, a younger audience and introducing the character to a younger generation?
In a way, yeah, I would imagine so. It's not like they're doing it the reverse, like Creed, for example.
Right.
No, they're not doing it that way. They're not doing it the Jurassic World way, where you get your two films and then now they bring back all the old folks from the original. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because nobody else can play Indiana Jones, apparently. So, I don't really know about watching because he was old, and I don't even remember when Crystal Skull came out. I almost want to say like 2009, maybe. He was showing some rust in that movie, and he's a lot older now. So
yeah.
I don't
2008,
know if I want
to see 2008, by the way.
2008, yeah. I don't know if I feel about watching Indiana Jones in a wheelchair or a walker.
Well, and here's the thing, though. Yeah, I agree, especially because the character wasn't... Like, with Wolverine, you could get away with it with Logan because, like, you know, the character... Well, he wasn't in a wheelchair or a walker. I mean, his character was what it is, but you got to see like Professor X is older and all that stuff. But Indiana Jones was, I mean, those movies were based on the old, like, you know, serials that they would have, you know, so it was like, you know, just fun adventure, you know, stuff like that. Like, it's not supposed to be like a deep character study, you know, not saying that that's exactly what it's going to be. But the other thing with Indiana Jones is I don't know, like, is the character, I mean, it's a product of our generation, right? Grew up watching those movies. But to me, like, that, again, and I mean, I felt the same with Han Solo, but I think even more so with Indiana Jones, like, it's really, that was a Harrison Ford thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know that you're just going to be able to, like, recast a younger actor and keep going. It's not that type of character that you know, is like this iconic character that, like, you know, you could just get other people to play and think it's, like, going to appeal to other people.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, he that is totally Harrison Ford, but who are they making this film for? Because it's for all of us people who grew up with him.
That's
right?
What I, like, yeah, I mean, that's what
it's
I
the
was
the entire
asking.
Generation of people who know absolutely nothing about Indiana Jones.
Right.
And so you're likely going to miss out on their interest because this is totally not, I would not imagine this being up their alley at all.
Right.
And I would imagine too that they're going to age him appropriately. So now you're in the 60s, which is like fine, but Yeah, I don't see it. I think there was so much fun watching Indiana Jones like punch Nazis in the face. It's why, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark is a gem. I mean, that and beyond that. And you know, the Last Crusade and all of that. I mean, those films are great. You know, Temple of Doom is a favorite of mine, because that was my real first exposure to Indiana Jones in the theater and all that stuff. So, but kind of, and then Crystal Skull, I was so excited for Crystal Skull. And then I'm like, aliens? Like, what? We're doing aliens? And then the action sequences didn't feel like the way that they used to feel. Like, the sound effects were there. And then the whole thing with the kid, with Shia LaBeouf, who I just didn't like anyways. Like, yeah, there was a lot
of them. And it's weird because it's not like they brought on like some other director to gratuitously direct like this fourth film.
No,
I mean, it's Spielberg, yeah. And it was just such a miss.
It was a big miss. They brought it up on, I watched Corridor Crew. It's a bunch of digital, visual effects artists. They kind of critique, good and bad CG along with stunts and stuff like that. And, they talked about the whole monkey vibe, you know, monkey swinging thing, and just some of the lighting and the choices made with special effects. And it's like, dude, you're Steven Spielberg and you didn't catch half of this stuff, and you've done it well before.
Yeah.
You've done it really well before.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
Jurassic Park, dude, holds up.
Yeah.
To this day.
Yeah, and you like weird.
Shit the bed with Indiana Jones.
Yep. Crystal Skull is really one of those movies that to me reeks of like, it just feels like a movie that they just hired some other director who wasn't going to be able to turn it down just to crank out a film with a name. Yeah. And it's funny that it's not that at all, but it just comes across that way.
Original crew.
And I wonder if Crystal Skull had never happened, would we be talking about another Indiana Jones movie right now? Like, or would they have just allowed it to just kind of fade off? You know, with The Last Crusade being the end. You know, or do they feel like Crystal Skull, which made money, by the way?
I'm sure.
Yeah, it did. I mean, do they feel like that was
because the aliens weren't in any of the marketing? I don't believe.
Right.
So. I don't know. I mean, I think part of it is our fascination with nostalgia, like now, it's a big deal, right? So we're revisiting a bunch of shit. It, you know, Stranger Things has all those callbacks. I mean, I just read something about The Labyrinth is coming back. So there's all of those things. I mean, we're kind of like tapping back into the 80s stuff. And
especially now with these streaming services, because they're looking
because now everyone has access to that kind of stuff again, and so they're kind of revisiting or kind of being introduced for the first time to some of this stuff,
and like they're the looking Goonies. For I mean, Vanessa brand was on stuff. Our show.
Vanessa was on a show a couple of weeks ago and had never seen the Goonies,
right?
Ever.
It's going to be on HBO Max, by the way.
Amazing. Yeah. Gonna watch that again. I mean, I own it, but I'll watch it. I own it digitally. And hard copy. It's like the movie's classic. But you know, I think we're also in a place where these films, when we revisit them and they strike out, it's okay to kind of go back to it. Terminator is a great example. Struck out multiple times, but we just keep on going back to the well. I hope they keep it dead now. Ghostbusters.
Right.
You know, they try to do that thing. They try to reboot it, but they're doing it again.
Yeah, and that's another reason why I'm big on this whole, like, never say never thing now.
No.
Because, like, look at, with all these streaming services coming out, like, all of them are looking to the past, right? And even broadcast TV and stuff like that. We're seeing, like, shows coming back. Like, literal shows coming back. Like, entire shows coming back now. Which, that was never something that happened really before. Rarely did it ever happen that you would just bring a show back after a decade. And you're seeing it. And a lot of it is because the streaming services, the networks, the cable channels, they want that brand recognition because it draws people in. And if you think about it, like on Netflix, like the two most popular shows, like catalog shows on Netflix forever were The Office and Friends.
Right.
So, yeah. And there's, so I was reading an article today about how, because Steve Carell's in that Space Force show on HBO.
Okay.
And they were saying how, you know, The Office has like an entire new generation of fans that discovered it through Netflix.
Right.
Because it was like the most streamed, Netflix, The Office and Friends were the two most streamed catalog shows on Netflix, which is why there was such a bidding war for those when the streaming service wars started, right? Why HBO Max paid so much money for Friends, why Peacock went after, got to get The Office back. Because of that. So people are looking for things to watch and they're going to find those quality shows. Oh, The Office, I've heard of that.
Yeah.
And then you watch it and it's, you love it. And now it's like, well, but now what? Because now you have an audience that just discovered a show that doesn't exist anymore. So now they're like, well, bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
And because now you have a whole new audience for it. I mean, so that's why all of this stuff, it's like, well, they'll never bring this person back to do that. Well, they may, because that's, it happens now.
Yeah.
And you can never have enough of things. And if it's got a brand name attached to it and it's got, they think there's an audience for it, then anything's possible now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, that's just the way that things are happening right now. Yep. And I'm kind of like on edge about it all because
I mean, look at the Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
They brought that back.
That's something when you like, that's a great way to do it. But see, the Dark Crystal to me is, that's, I mean, that's such a cult film. Like, I don't think a lot of people watch the Dark Crystal, but now they've been introduced to it through the show.
Yes.
Yeah. That's a good,
I mean, look at me because I'm a geek, right? I mean, I like all this stuff and I had never seen the Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
And then because of that Netflix show, I watched The Dark Crystal. So, you know, you never know.
Yeah.
You know, there's always somebody that you could reintroduce something to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. Well, here's to Indiana Jones 5. I hope they do it well.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see.
Anyways.
Yeah.
What's next?
So I don't think there's much else. I mean, there really wasn't. I mean, for the second week in a row, we were planning on having a conversation about Rotten Tomatoes and the idea of like revising the scores.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to be able to get into that again now because we've gone off on, you know, all the Snyder stuff and all the other stuff. So one of these days. When maybe there's a little less to talk. It's like all of a sudden, all those weeks we were looking for things to talk about, right? And it's like now these last 2 weeks we've had to shelve this conversation because we've had too much to talk about. So one of these weeks they'll probably have, there won't be much to talk about again and we'll be able to get to that. Because I do want to have it. It's an interesting conversation to be had about.
For sure. You
know, whether we should revisit Rotten Tomatoes scores and revise them. And we'll get into more of it about that. Maybe next week, who knows, but
yeah, well, we'll be by that point we'll be neck deep in
HBO Max
so we can talk about that and so you know episode 98 lots more to, and who knows what else will be announced
right in the next of course because now we're going to start making up for lost time.
Yeah and you know again and then you know things are kind of get slowly you know, creating a new normal, kind of getting to a new normal. And and there are rumors that films like The Batman are re-entering production in the near term. So there's lots on the horizon.
Oh, but before we do go, though, do mention that thing you had about the movie theaters.
Yeah, so Adam Tickets, this is a report done by the Hollywood Reporter. So Adam Tickets conducted a survey about 1,500 people regarding their return to the theaters and how soon, you know, folks would be expected to kind of be back in the seats. And so they would wait up to a month until theaters reopen. So after theaters open, a month after that would be when most respondents would feel comfortable returning back to theaters. And they are most concerned of seating and capacity, obviously. So having some space there. So, you know, we're thinking 50%, maybe even less than that, of capacity, and then, you know, people masking up. So that, that's an interesting survey. It's, again, not a lot of people taken, in that, but, I think it's a good number nonetheless to kind of give us a quick snapshot of how people, you know, feel in terms of their comfort levels of returning to the theater. I had a Twitter exchange with a couple of folks, and they were talking about, you know, regardless, they were going to go to the theaters to see Tenet when it drops in July. And I was like, nope, ain't doing it. Because I love watching, you know, first of all, I'm a fat dude, love popcorn. And I'm not eating popcorn through a mask or like lifting my mask and having to do that all the time. So,
well, yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation to be had about how we've misconstrued the rules, you know, as far as masks, 6 feet, all that stuff, but whatever, that's a different conversation for a different forum. But, I mean, I agree. I don't know that I'm going to rush out, and I don't know that that trailer was cool. But I don't know that that would have been the movie that was going to get me to rush out to go to theaters. Although, interesting, I do know a whole bunch of people that ventured out last weekend to drive-ins.
Mm.
So that's interesting that people seem to be embracing that. So, and I don't know what that means. I don't know if it means that people are itching to go to the movies again. Once theaters reopen, they will. Or if it just means that people are looking for anything to do. So this is one of those things that's available to do for entertainment.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah, you know? So.
I did a drive-in like once in my life. Like, and I was super young. But that's cool, you know. I'd love to see those kind of pick back up because I think it's a cool experience.
Yeah, and it's something that is different, right? It's an old thing, but it's something that can be new again. And it's another one of those things where, you know, as people like go to theaters less, like this could be a new thing, right? You can almost have a new audience. A lot of the people that I talked to that did go to drive-ins are not movie people.
Mm.
Like they're not people that go to theaters very often. Yeah, they'll go to a movie every once in a while. But like these aren't like people like us, right, that are always at the movies. So it's interesting that maybe there's a way to appeal to that newer audience, a different audience, because maybe they don't go to the movies. Forget about the COVID stuff. They just didn't want to go to the movies because they don't like crowds, right? Or they don't like
they don't like people.
People, right? They don't want to have to deal with the person talking next to them or the this or that or whatever.
Yeah, you're in the comfort of your own
car. The comfort of your own car. It's something different. It's something cool.
Get to drink your own drinks.
Yeah. And you can, you know, you don't have to sneak your own snacks in. You know, it's easy to just bring your own stuff. You know, you can make a day. So I think that it's something that is interesting. And I think it is one of those things that if it winds up being successful, then you might see more and more of it. And it could tie into, you know, the future of cinema, which would be interesting, right? Because we're all thinking about like reclining chairs and, you know, how can we make screens even bigger?
Yeah, they try to bring the at-home experience to the theater.
Yeah.
When the closest thing that's always been that has been your car.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And I know people that treat their car like it's their living room.
Yeah. So, you know, I know people, they brought trucks with them and they laid blankets out in the back.
Oh, cool.
And these are new concepts. These are people that weren't a drive-in generation. So I do think it's interesting. I mean, some of the prices that I've seen for these drive-in experiences where they're showing older films are
like $3, $5.
$3. There was a restaurant, I want to say maybe a diner, here in New York.
Oh, the one in Astoria.
No, it wasn't the Bel Air in Astoria. It was in Long Island City. It was one of the ones on Long Island, I think, that somebody was doing some place on Long Island anyway. I think it was a restaurant that was doing like a drive-in week, you know, every week they would do in like a different movie or whatever. It was $50 And but you got like a $25 like meal voucher with that.
$50.
Yeah, and they were basically like you could get all you could order all your food from the restaurant. They bring it out to your car, but it's like, so you're basically forcing someone $50 to buy $25 of your food, right? And then $25 to watch like, you know, the Goonies, or to watch like, you know, an old movie that they're firing up on a, you know, on a streaming app or whatever. That's a little crazy.
No.
You got to be smart about it. That certainly is not going to replace the theater experience.
Shit.
Yeah, but again,
$50. Oh, here's a $25. $25, really?
Yeah.
What?
Now, I don't know if
putting up a screen.
Yeah, I don't know if that was $50 per person or if it was $50 as many people as you could fit in your car. I don't know, but either way, that's not exactly what you're thinking of. But you certainly could, if you were smart, operate these drive-ins at a much lower overhead and, you know, maybe reduce the prices. I mean, look, who knows? Clearly, they would have to have deals with, you know, distributors and whatnot, and I'm sure the theater chains aren't going to be too happy about that. But it is interesting that I've seen a lot of people kind of excited about the whole drive-in experience thing. So we'll see what that leads to.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
Well, let's do our plugs and we'll leave you guys.
Yes. Of course, you can go to thefanboygarage.com and check out our episode archive and check out our merch store. Get yourself a Fanboy Garage face mask, and you know, which T Public will donate a FDA approved surgical mask, one for every fabric mask that is purchased that will go to direct relief to support healthcare facilities in need. And of course, you can join the conversation, the non-toxic conversation, at all the social medias, the Twitter, the Facebook, the Instagram, all that fun stuff, and at the Fanboy Garage. And you can try to find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at AARonSpeaks. That is A_A_RonSpeaks. Thank you so much to listening to episode 97. The Fanboy Garage, and we'll catch you guys next week. Take care.